This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming Invest Talk podcast.
Now let's go to a live call. Richard in Santa Clarita wants to talk about strategy in case of a recession.
Yeah, hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a longtime listener, and I might make a few quotes I heard, Steve say, and some things you've said as well. But in terms of preparation or portfolio preparation, I should say, for a possible recession, upcoming recession, or at least a very strong pullback. First of all, I know that Steve always said you never, you might sell, do some trimming, take profits off the table. You never get out of the market because you never know what's going to really happen. No forecaster, knows for sure. But one of the things to do, I would think, would be to set up, some dry powder, cash. I remember during the COVID recession, the short one, it was cash is king was the thing that was being said so much. So my question would be, what do you think of the chances at this stage of a very strong pullback recession? And if so, what percent of a portfolio should you have in cash that's ready to go? Because when the market, the market usually goes up, but takes the stairs. When it comes down, though, sometimes it can take the elevator. With that percentage, I'm thinking maybe 10% to 15% would be something. And you can put that in a money market also, where it at least collects some interest. Given what's going on right now, what do you think in terms of this current environment, which you should hold in cash?
Yeah, well, I think if we are going into recession, which I do think there's an increasing likelihood that we will be in a recession sometime next year. I don't think it'll happen this year, but I do think next year is an increasing possibility. How much cash you should have is definitely dependent on the person, the risk tolerance level, the goals for the money, how long term is it, how short term is that account. If you're needing that money in the near term, then obviously you want to have much higher levels than cash than 10 or 15%. If it's long-term money, 10, 15, 20% is not an issue. But I think it has more to do with your asset allocation, because you really want to be in sectors that can continue to do well. There are certainly companies and broader sectors that can buck the trend. And do you want to be in the stocks that are remaining in relatively good trends, right? Uptrends, at least neutral and kind of trading water during times when there's more pressure on the market. And so you can do things like that. You could buy puts, you could sell covered calls. That's a way to lower the risk of a portfolio. That's something to certainly consider. And remember, a lot of people think that a recession is 08. A recession is not always 08. Now, there can be pockets that are greatly affected that go down considerably. I think of the recession before that. I think of COVID recession, that's kind of a one-off, kind of a unique scenario, because it technically was a recession with shutting down the economy. But I kind of throw that one out, But if you look at like the 2003 recession, you had technology stocks go down dramatically. So you could have something like that where multiples contract considerably and growth slows in certain pockets of the market. But if you look at that period, the NASDAQ went down 70 or 80%, but the S&P only went down about 20%, 25%, I think it was, from peak to trough, which means that there's pockets in there that were fine, that didn't really go down much at all, and many continued to go up. So I think it's more about a shift in your sector allocation and being overweight the non-cyclical sectors, utilities, consumer staples, it's maybe REITs, things like that, and having a shift towards that. And obviously, once again, there's still pockets of demand for maybe AI data centers, even though you might be in a recession, and there can be companies that continue to do well. So I don't think it's just, you don't think just cash. It's not just about that. That can be part of it, but it's about staying in the right companies and sectors that are still outperforming, that have good relative strength, et cetera. So I love your question, but also adjust your understanding of what a recession means for the market.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial. InvestTalk listeners and KPP clients alike are invited to take advantage of the many products and services of KPP Financial. For example, the InvestTalk radio program and its podcast replays, the new online training experience, InvestTalk Academy, and the KPP Premium newsletter distributed to subscribers each Friday. Learn more anytime at InvestTalk.com. The phone lines are open now, and you can call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
I just ended up in silver. I do hold two companies, EXK, Endeavor, and FFM, for the mining. And I've been holding it for quite some time for the silver to gold catch-up trade, and I've noticed that it is doing well now, and it is pretty volatile. I'm curious, what do you guys do for your silver positions when it is rallying like this? Do you hold it and take some off the top? Do you wait for the catch-up, I guess, ratio to complete? Or are there some macro signals that you look for and then you start getting out of it completely? Just curious how you guys play this. Just wanted to get a head start as silver is rallying the last couple of days. Thank you. Bye.
So silver has rallied a little bit, but it's still lagging behind the historical ratio of gold, right? You typically have seen this little push-pull dynamic between gold and silver, but that hasn't really happened recently. It's a little bit decoupled. It's been lagging gold for just about a year and a half now, right? Since the beginning of 2024, but that's on the back of gold's historic run-up. And so you have to understand the different dynamics between what drives gold prices and what drives silver prices. Gold prices are driven by primarily uncertainty. It's a haven asset, a hard asset that has historically, for a very long time, been used as a store of value. Silver used to be in line with that, but it's more of the industrial metal now. And so the reason why you're seeing this divergence is because you have a lot of uncertainty and downward demand pressure from an industrial base. And so that's why it's kind of lagged. Now, your question is, with the rally, what would we do? Well, we would treat silver the same way we would treat any other company we're invested in. When you are up, when things rally, it is a tried and true investment strategy to sell at the highs, buy at the lows. That is the goal. And so with any other company, you should continue to trim, continue to take profits, take off the table, further diversify into sectors that may do well in the short, medium term. Because you're right, it is incredibly volatile. Commodities are incredibly volatile. So when the going is good, take some profit. Thanks for the call.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com, and while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART.
The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to five mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in three easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got another live call. Larry from San Francisco has a question about rolling over an IRA.
Hello, thanks for taking the call. I love what you guys are doing for us out here. Yeah, I separated from an employer, and it was a defined benefit plan, a pension. I rolled over it was about $100,000 to IRA Fidelity. I hold about 15 positions already, and I'm just wondering how to divvy that up. Of course, I'm heavy in tech. About half my positions are across that Mega 7 or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. I'm asking, how do I dollar cost average month over month? Or do I just put it all in at once? I'm 45, just looking. I'm aggressive growth is my style right now, my investment style. So I'm just looking for a second opinion on how to go about, kind of dollar cost averaging or just kind of throw it in lump sum.
The research is interesting on this, but again, it's kind of difficult, right? Because timing is so hard, right? So time in the market beats timing the market. And when you look at dollar cost averaging versus lump sum investing, the research that I saw actually shows that lump sum investing have higher expected returns. Now that keeps in mind that typically lump sum investing is done on down days, right? And so from a risk perspective, just given where we are in the market right now, we're pretty elevated. You have rising tensions in the Middle East. You have pretty much a Goldilocks scenario on earnings. If it were me, I would continue to dollar cost average in. Now, you mentioned that you have a lot of exposure to tech, so be cognizant of the risks you're taking on. Obviously, you're a growth investor, but you do have to be aware of some of those risks and how those companies would react should things move south pretty quickly. And so I would advise you to continue to be as diversified as you possibly can when you're reinvesting your money. Keep in mind, right, it's a good time to be patient, right? You can get pretty solid yields by keeping your excess cash in something like ESGOV and getting interest. And so you have the ability now to dollar cost average, understand the risks of where we are and what is on the horizon. I wish you the best of luck. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Pete from Staten Island, New York. Over the last few months, I've seen my portfolio kind of go up by like 75%. So I'm sitting on a lot of profits right now. And over the last few weeks, I've been taking a lot of chips off the table. And I just started looking and I realized that I'm sitting on like 30% cash in my portfolio. I was wondering what you guys do in a situation like this where the market's a little bit frothy, equities are soaring, you're taking profits, but are you guys directly investing them like right away? Or are you playing like the long game and just kind of waiting and being patient? My gut is telling me to wait and be patient, but I also don't like sitting on that 30% cash because it obviously could be growing as well. So this is more of like a portfolio question. How do you guys rebalance in a time like this? I appreciate it. And I'll look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
This is a great question and very interesting one because cash in and of itself in an account isn't siloed. It's also, you have to take the rest of the account into consideration as well. So you said that you're up 75% of the year. Obviously, you only get that type of performance if you're investing in aggressive positions, speculative positions. So you might have 30% cash, But that 70% might be in very aggressive speculative stocks, small modular reactors and chip names and AI names and names that, as we saw in 2022, can go down a lot. So your overall portfolio still might be risky, even with 30% cash. So a lot does depend on what the rest of the portfolio is doing. Now, you're right. There's some frothiness in the market, but that doesn't mean you can't continue to go up. It might be a little harder because we're overbought, right? There's not a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. There's a lot of leverage with margin loans, et cetera. So, and there's a lot of speculation within the options market, a lot of call option activity. That's the market that we are in right now. And is it good risk versus reward over the medium term? Probably not. But yes, you could be missing out. But if you put that money to work in companies that overbought, that are overpriced, and then suddenly liquidity inflects, are you going to be getting out in time? So I would be looking to take that cash and find other opportunities in the market, broaden out your portfolio beyond just highly speculative names. Because there are other opportunities out there like that, whether that's precious metals. You know, I have to look at the rest of the portfolio and say, okay, you can use this cash elsewhere. Maybe it's utility companies. Maybe it's industrial names. Where are you underweight? And that's where I'd be going to look for opportunities. So it's hard to be blanket and say you use the cash, you don't use the cash. A lot of it depends on what type of risk you're taking, what opportunities maybe you're not exposed to in your portfolio. And there still could still be places to deploy that capital. Because there always is. There are always good opportunities in the marketplace. Sometimes they're very abundant and other times not so much. Hopefully that gave you some context to think about whether you should deploy the cash and where you should do it.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin or Luke, this is Tyler from Kansas City. My question today has to do with earnings forecasts. I have a list of maybe 30 to 40 stocks that have alerts at prices I find them interesting at. When the alert goes off, I reconfirm that I'm still interested in these names and then sell puts or go ahead and buy into the names if I don't think they'll go in any lower. Over the years, I noticed that a decent percentage of these alerts happen when an earnings or revenue forecast gets a revision to the downside. All my information sources seem to be late by 1 to 3 days. This gets frustrating when I take a position just to realize that forecasts have been lowered to a point that I would have lowered my target buy-in price. Who have you found to be the best original sources that indicate these revisions? And do you register to anyone specific for these type of forecasted earnings and or revenue alerts? Thank you, guys. I'll be listening on the podcast.
This is a great question. And this is an area where it's difficult for the average investor to get good, up-to-date data. We use FactSet. Now, we have, we're an RIA. We're a financial advisor. We can pay for it. It's tens of thousands of dollars a year for this data. And what they're doing is they're aggregating all of the earnings estimates from the major banks. We can see it. We can go in, we can see every single one, what the trend is. Is it rising? Is it falling? Is it staying flat? What does it look like for this year, next year, even the year after? And we can see that pretty much in real time. And so that's how we do it. Now, there are other tools that access some of FactSet's data, but you're not going to get the granular details there. And I don't know how fast they get an update from FactSet, right? There might be some delay there. I'm not sure. So that's kind of that difficult separation. It's maybe something where AI could help, scraping the internet for the most up-to-date earnings data. But as we know, AI kind of makes sure you check where it's coming from and check its sources. It should link its sources out, and then you can kind of dig into there. That's probably what I would do if I didn't have something like FactSet, which I can go to at any time and just grab. So that's where we're at. Hopefully that helps. It's probably not a complete answer, but at least a direction you can go in. Thanks for the call.
Hi, this is Dick from Hawaii. I was wondering if you could discuss the pros and cons of using a 351 exchange to address concentrated positions with capital gain increases and the benefits of that process. Thank you very much. Bye.
So a 351 exchange is you're essentially taking property, appreciated stock, concentrated position. You are shifting it. You're transferring it to a corporation that you create for in exchange for shares in that corporation. Corporation takes your carryover basis in the property. You take the stock with that same basis. Now, there are some benefits to it, right? You're deferring immediate capital gains taxes. You're allowing diversification within the business. So let's say you take your concentrated shares in whatever your company is, and you sell those shares in order to diversify. You're getting that deferred taxes. And it gives you control and liability protection, right? You can integrate it with your estate and wealth transfer planning. But there are costs, right? You're getting double taxation because it's a corporate structure. So you're getting a corporate tax rate. You're getting a dividend tax rate. The most important one, I think, for me, is you lose your step-up in cost basis at death. So your inheritors will not get that step-up in cost basis on those assets. And, you know, you have ongoing corporate compliance and administrative costs. You have to meet IRS control rules. And so who's it for, right? It's for people that are families, you know, families or closely held groups that are setting up a family investment company. It works well for those. Situations where you wouldn't get a step-up in cost basis at all is a good situation for there. But, you know, for us, we help out clients all the time who are in a situation where they want to defer taxes. That's the point of the deferred sales trusts that we use, the DSTs. And so I think there are just other tools as well where you can greatly benefit from that deferral without, again, some of those costs, the loss in step-up and cost basis, and also the cost of just maintaining compliance and administration. Thanks for the call.
Now, every day we receive questions from the comment section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Here's one that came in earlier. Lindsay says, what are your thoughts on the short-term rental market? Are there good opportunities for investments in short-term rental properties out there, or is the market too saturated at this point? Now, the first thing you have to understand about every real estate market is that it's localized. Now, there are general trends, and generally, the real estate market is slowing. But there are pockets of, you know, like in Denver, for example, Austin, Texas. These are markets that are very weak. Other markets, not quite as bad. Now, when it comes to short-term rental market, I'm very weary of that market, mainly because it hasn't really seen a true recession. The Airbnb, VRBO market, it was really in its infancy in 2008-09, right? I don't even know if it really existed at that point. Didn't really start taking off until, you know, the mid-2010s. And if you buy at the right price and you buy in the right locale, there's not a lot of competition. You can make very good returns, but it's also kind of a headache. I've talked to friends, family that have these type of properties, and it's a lot of work. It's its own little business. It's basically a bed and breakfast. So that's what Airbnb stands for, right? It's air, bed, and breakfast. It's a lot of work, and you can get good returns, but you need to have the time and the discipline and the know-how to manage these properties. And then there are regulatory issues locally. Sometimes they change the laws and the rules, and that can hurt the value. You're seeing that, I think, in Palm Springs area right now. So are there opportunities? Sure. But you have to do your deep research and make sure you buy right, both on price and the right locale.
This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started. It's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers three types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to nordprotect.com/investtalk and use the code investtalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. NordProtect.com/investtalk and use code investtalk.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
I'm a part of a corporation that offers a cash balance program that we can contribute to. I believe it's pre-tax dollars. Personally, I can contribute up to $75,000 in pre-tax dollars per year. I am not really familiar with cash balance programs, so I guess my question would be, do you know anything about them, or can you help guide me in making a decision on whether or not I should be investing this money in the cash balance opportunity that they present, or maybe put it somewhere else like a money market or somewhere where it's a little more liquid, where I can use the money more at hand if I needed it? Appreciate all you do. We'll listen to the answer on the podcast. Thank you.
I love this question because it's not talked about very much. We do invest some cash balance accounts for clients. Now, setting up those plans involves third-party administrators, actuaries. It can be expensive to kind of set up, maintain, but it's also a place where you can set aside, you said $75,000 for yourself, but some business owners, this is typically for business owners, and you might be part of maybe one of many owners, and some can put $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. There's some calculations there that it is pre-tax, and you basically get to write that contribution off on your taxes each year. And those that are in the high tax bracket, that can be a smart play. So I would do it if you're in a high tax bracket. But when it comes to liquidity, that's a bigger, broader question to your financial plan, right? What do you need this money for? You know, is this long-term money for retirement? Then cash balance plan is perfect. If you're thinking this money is for buying a house in the next couple of years, probably not. So it just depends on what this money is bucketed for. Now, you can invest it in anything you want when you do put the money in cash balance plan. Like I said, it's kind of like a personal trust or business trust. And you know, we set them up at Schwab. You can set them up in any big brokerage firm. But like I said, it's usually connected to a 401k of some type. Think of it kind of like it's a personal pension plan in a way. These can be complex, but this is something you want to talk to a professional about. But like I said, you have the setup. It sounds like it's been set up for you. But the better question is, what do you need this money for in the near term? If you need it, I wouldn't put it in. If you are earmarking this for the long term, then I would utilize it.
All right, here comes another question, this time from a listener in Tennessee.
This is Tommy from Nashville. Love your program. I really wanted to ask, my employer recently started offering a Roth 401k, and they've always offered a traditional 401k, which I've been contributing to. My question is, should I start to transfer my funds into my Roth 401k, or should I leave it in my traditional? I still do have a Roth IRA that I've been contributing to and maxing out every year. So any advice that you guys would have in this, I would be grateful for. Thank you so much. Love your program. You guys have a great day.
You can't really just directly transfer your money from your traditional 401k directly into your Roth 401k. You would need to do something called an in-service, in-plan Roth conversion. But like a traditional or a typical Roth conversion, there are some tax implications. So because traditional IRAs, traditional 401k plans are tax deferred, right? They are pre-tax contributions. If you are doing this rollover, you have to pay taxes on the earned income in the account in the year that you are doing this rollover. And, you know, this can be beneficial sometimes, but sometimes it can push you into a higher tax bracket. You can actually end up paying more in taxes and have a higher tax burden because you decide to do this. I think this is one of the main confusion points for a lot of people, is not understanding the math of this. If tax rates are the same, right? If your tax rate's 10% and you have $100 and you're going to see a 100% return. Let's say you pay the taxes up front. Well, your $10 or your $100 turned into 90. 100% return makes it 180. Okay. Let's say you pay taxes on the back end. Well, your $100, 100% return is 200. Then you pay 10% tax on that. That's 20. You get 180. If tax rates are the same and the return is the same, a Roth and a traditional account would have the exact same return. And I don't think people understand that. The only way it is beneficial is if the tax rate is lower. If the tax rate is lower. If the tax rate has differences, that is where the benefits come from. And so you only want to do that conversion into that tax-free growth if you have the ability to take advantage of lower tax rates at the time at which you're doing the conversion. If this is your situation, if you have a low tax year on the horizon, if you think that your tax rate is going to be lower than it is in the future, then yes, it would make sense to try and do this in-service rollover. The next step would be to talk to your plan administrator, but understand the real cost here is the tax difference. Dial that in before you make a decision. Thanks for the call.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a voicemail call from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Eric from New York. Thanks for all the information that you guys give every day in your podcast. I'm an avid listener on my hour and a half commute. You guys talk about investing in stocks and bonds and other types of investment products. I'm a typical retail investor. I have the typical retail investor apps that I use. I don't really have a financial advisor. How can someone like me actually go about investing in a corporate bonds or municipal bonds? How can someone like me get involved in the actual bond market? I hear you guys talk about it a lot in terms of diversification, rate of return, everything like that. But I actually don't really, I guess maybe I should look a little bit more, but I don't have a lot of exposure into the bonds. I'm just, you know, buying stocks, buying ETFs. Yeah, if you could look into that for me, that would be great. And I'll listen to it on the podcast. Thank you.
Sounds good. Well, there are many ways to invest in the bond market. For the average investor like yourself, you know, ETF is probably the simple way. Now, bonds are a completely different beast than equities. So you really have to educate yourself on the risks that are there. The main two are credit risk, meaning defaults, when you buy an ETF or a mutual fund or mutual funds that hold bonds and bond funds there, you get diversification. So you don't get a lot of default risk of individual names because you're so spread out, but you can get yield spreads widening out and you can lose money over short periods of time when you take a lot of credit risk. So understand that. And then there's duration risk, which is how long, what's the maturity length of these bonds that you're holding in that particular fund. So you want to really understand that and figure out how much risk you want to take. Then you can also buy individual bonds. Your broker probably has a bond desk. If you're at one of the major brokers, you can call them up and discuss potentially buying an individual bond as well, and they'll probably help you understand the risk there as well. So a lot of ways to do it, but make sure you do your research before you fire on anything.
Alrighty, this is Invest Talk, and our show is about questions, so let us roll in another listener question now.
Hi, I've heard past callers ask about questions about puts or leaks, and I sort of understand what a lot of those terms mean. You're talking about different types of trades, but I don't have a full understanding of it, and I do want to learn. I've tried looking up some information about that online, but a lot of it is very technical or information that seems to be geared towards people who already know what that all means, or YouTubers who are maybe selling different types of courses, which if you have a pay option that you would recommend, I would do that. I don't mind buying a course that is informational and helpful. It's hard to find one that's legit, though. I was wondering if you might have any resources that you would share to people who are trying to learn and understand this better, trying to get a full understanding of the terminology, the different types of trades, how to apply them, what to look for that would tell them when to apply different things. I would appreciate that very much. Thank you.
That is a very big and very important question that I don't think we have the time to dive into fully on this format. Now, it is true, there are a lot of paid classes on these types of things. And you at the top mentioned options, puts, leaps, all of these things that are a bit more complex in terms of their strategy than when you talk about just building a typical equity bond portfolio. And I could direct you towards any one of these paid services that can give you a lesson, right? That can help you learn about the basics before you move on towards another layer of complexity, because a lot of the times the conversation is complex because the assumption is that if you're looking at these types of strategies, you have a foundational knowledge. But here's what I will say, and this is plugging Invest Talk a little bit. We have started on our YouTube to pick back up our series, the Invest Talk Classroom series. And what it achieves to do, what it aims to do, is help to teach you about concepts that may be complex in a very simple way. And given that question, we will make sure that one of the next episodes we do is an explanation to try and simplify and help you understand all of these very complex topics within the option space. And like all of our other episodes, it'll be available for free. So just head over to our InvestTalk YouTube channel. That is InvestTalk with two T's. Look for the InvestTalk Classroom series. And we'll have that episode out to you as soon as we can. Thanks for the call.
You've got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
All right, let's keep things rolling and answer another caller question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. My name is Enrique calling from Pacific Beach. My question is it better to reinvest the dividends back into the stock or to get them deposited into your core account, even though if you're going to keep investing $500 to $1,000 a month? Just want to hear your take on it. Looking forward to the answer on the podcast. Thank you very much.
So the question is around, it sounds like DRIPs, dividend reinvestment plans. And so the idea is when a dividend is paid out by a company, you may be offered cash or you may be offered to elect to reinvest those dividends directly. Now, there are some costs and benefits here. There are some things that you have to understand. One of them is, well, it is best if you want long-term compounding and you intend to buy the same company to just have the dividends reinvested, right? There is a settlement time between when cash is delivered and then you can buy the shares, prices move. If your intention is that you want to buy the same thing, well, then it makes the most sense to just reinvest those dividends directly. But if you need income, right, if you need cash, if you want the flexibility to invest it in a different name, if you expect the stock is maybe a little bit too high in your portfolio in terms of weighting, well, then you'd want to take cash. The reality is, though, no matter what you do, tax is the same in terms of tax treatment, right? Dividends are taxed the year you receive them. Reinvesting doesn't defer those taxes unless, of course, it's in a tax-advantaged account. So I guess the answer is it depends what you want to do with it. Just at a quick one, quick high level again. If you want to invest it somewhere else, you need the cash, take the cash. If you're going to reinvest it in the name, just reinvest it using the dividend reinvestment program. You may even get a little bit of a discount. Thanks for the call.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com.
Let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for this question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. My name is Jim from New York. I have a general question about retirement accounts. I am currently a full-time employee, and I have a 403B. I also have a small business. I'm self-employed as well. I was wondering if I can max out my 403B for my full-time employment and also start another retirement account for my small business. Can I contribute to two different retirement accounts, like a SEP IRA or another kind of a retirement account for my small business? Is that possible? Is it legal? Thank you.
The simple answer is yes, you can. Now, there are limitations to it. There's limitations basically in income and total contributions. So this is something that you want to talk to a tax advisor, whether it's a CPA or some other licensed tax advisor, to help you with that, because obviously I don't know your income. But you can. You can contribute to a 403B or a 401K or a TSP and contribute to an IRA or Roth IRA or SEP IRA, depending on what you qualify for. But it depends on your total income and that total contribution. So make sure you talk to a licensed professional before you do that, okay? Or an advisor, a financial advisor like me that would go over exactly what this looks like and help explain kind of where you're at within the rules of the tax code. Not a tax professional, but you know the basics. But once again, you have to know kind of intimately what that income really looks like. Thanks for the call. Great question. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't understand that it's not just your 401k. It's not just your 403B, it's not just even an IRA, right? You know, you have limitations to that, the capped contributions, but it's always good to consult with a tax professional before you make that contribution.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Justin, Luke, Chuck from Clayton, so appreciative for everything you've done for us. Here's my question. Listening to your advice over the last 10 or so years, I've been pretty dang successful in my account. I have an investing account, that's a straight investment account, and a traditional IRA. My understanding is, as we go to the later part of the year, and I move some of this into bonds and treasuries, expecting a little bit of a pullback, as I switch my investment account, whether I pull it out or turn around and put it right into bonds, I will have to pay taxes on my gain. Is that correct? And as I switch my traditional IRA and pull the money out, regardless of my gains, if I leave it in the traditional IRA and just move it into what my investment company gives me for stocks and bonds and treasuries, I do not have to play games on that. I only play games on that when I actually pull it out of the IRA, period. This all make sense? Looking forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. Thanks again for all of your advice and everything you've done for us.
Well, appreciate your kind words. And simple answer to your questions are yes. You know, with an IRA, whether you have a gain or a loss, the only tax implication is when you take the money out of it, okay? Or if you do a Roth conversion, and that is something you should talk about with your advisor, or if you want to call us, we can help you discuss that and what that planning should look like. So that is a strategy almost everyone should be looking at, some sort of Roth conversion strategy at some point, typically between retirement and taking Social Security or taking your RMDs, etc. So that's a deeper conversation, but you're right. Moving money in and out of whatever within an IRA is not a tax, does not create tax consequences. But on a taxable account, yeah, if you have a gain, you sell it. Hopefully you want to sell it at long-term capital gains, so you have a lower tax rate there. But you know, you have to consider that as part of the decision-making process, right? Just because we have a market pullback or maybe markets get a little rougher doesn't necessarily mean that you should be crystallizing those gains. Not a terrible idea, but it's in context to your full financial picture. So understand that as well. And hopefully your current advisor is helping you with that. If not, schedule a call with us.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
Alrighty, let's drop in another listener question now.
Hi, I want to thank, first of all, to Justin and Luke for the amazing show and all the information you guys are providing. Thank you so much again. What I want to know is, in terms of long-term investment, what kind of financial ratios do you guys or do one should typically look into to understand the company and to decide if this company is a go, no-go kind of a thing? Again, thank you for so much of your information, and I keep hearing the show every day. Thank you guys again. Bye.
All righty. So what are some important financial ratios to look at? There's a lot, right? When you're analyzing a business, there is no one size fits all thing that just tells you, well, this is a good company, this is not a good company. There are so many things to look at. When you're talking about looking at liquidity, current ratio, quick ratio, cash ratio, this is all telling you how much liquid cash or investments a company has relative to what its liabilities are. There's leverage ratios, your debt to equity, all sorts of leverage ratios that can tell you, okay, how do they capitalize this business? Does this company have more debt than other companies in its industry? There's profitability ratios. That's what margins are, your net margin, your EBITDA margin, your operating profit margin relative to your book value of your assets. Then you have your valuation multiples, your forward-looking price to earnings, price to book. You have your efficiency ratios, your asset turnover, your inventory turnover. It becomes incredibly complex and incredibly difficult. And some of these ratios mean more for some companies than they do for others. Inventory turnover is going to mean a lot more for a retail company than it is going to mean for a utility company. And so that's to say, it is difficult when analyzing these companies to just say that there is one size fits all. You have to have a holistic approach. And it's not just about how the company is doing, because most of the return of a stock is going to be how the market returns. After that, a lot of it's going to be how the sector returns. So little is dependent upon what the individual company does. And so when you're looking for these companies to invest in, you have to get the top stuff done first. What is your macro worldview? How does your theme, the theme over which you're investing, how is it informed by that macro worldview? Only then can you start to dive into some of those critical ratios, profitability, cash, leverage, to help you select appropriate companies for your strategy and your risk profile.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.